If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Well, welcome to Thursday evening at 7.06 p.m. This is Chris Elfheim in The Rational Revolution, where we do our darndest to have good conversation more than anything else about issues that tend to affect you, your family, your kitchen table, your business, that type of stuff. I am happy to say tonight I have two of my favorite fellas with me. We have as a guest host Dr. Tony Palmieri. You're going to chuckle every time I say that?
I do. Hi, Chris.
Hi. And then we have my favorite red bandit. I don't know. Dean Rash is with us tonight. Welcome back, Dino.
Red Bandit. Is that because of my native culture, or is that just because I'm...
I would never make a comment on a native culture.
Oh, it could work both ways for me.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. You lead that discussion, and I'll let you lead on that.
Okay.
All right, so we are back here tonight. Let's see. We have not been on for a couple of weeks now, so we've gone through Thanksgiving a little bit. How did everybody's Thanksgiving go?
Fun. We had about 14 people in our house, a bunch of family and friends. It was really great.
That's awesome.
A lot of festivity.
Beautiful.
Do you know we're about the same. We had 11 people there. One had to back out at the last minute because his company couldn't get him back home. He's a trucker.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of food, a lot of good stuff, a lot of eats. Packers won.
Yes.
Surprisingly. Oh, yeah. But you know what? You'll understand why they won, because we had a waxing gibbous moon, and the Detroit Lions have not won a Thursday Thanksgiving game since 1960s when the moon is in that setting.
I don't know what to say to that.
I don't either, but that's a fact.
That's like Twilight Zone type.
It is. My son brought that fact up, and I'm like, this is crazy.
Well, because he brought it up, I'll appreciate it then.
Yeah.
Do you have any traditions, Thanksgiving traditions, that you carry on each year? Beyond the food, or is there something certain, you know, something specific that comes up?
Not really. I mean, just getting all the family together. Like, my daughter Kaylee was home. Getting away from work for a little bit, and she's home tonight actually listening, so I'm proud of her for listening.
Well, hey, Kaylee.
See?
I'll try not to pick on your dad too much, or I will. You'll probably appreciate it.
So not too many traditions, just getting everybody together at the house and making a good meal. And
here's the question: are we still eating leftovers, or have we punted that down the road by
done
now?
Done.
Oh God, yeah,
done. They were done quickly.
I can't. The thing is, I can't wait for leftovers, and then I want them to go away. I only want them like once, and then it's over. Also, why do we wait all year long to have turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes and cranberries? You realize we can buy that year round.
Of course. Yeah,
we can.
Oh, also, hint, if you want to go buy a little turkey on sale, it's frozen, go ask your butcher to cut it in half and rewrap it.
Oh.
Then you can bake up yourself a half a turkey and do this at the midpoint. I'm just going to throw it out there.
So we actually spatchcock our turkey every year.
Don't swear on the air.
I'm not swearing. It's actually a term. You basically cut the backbone out. You lay it flat. The whole turkey will cook in about an hour to an hour and a half.
I feel like that's a Viking torture mechanism.
It's being a red bandit. We do that as red bandits.
Good Lord. All right. All right. So our conversation today, we're going to start out our conversation, and heaven knows where it's going to go with, you know, the three of us. But we're going to talk a little bit since the 17th of November. I've had some, you know, had a little issue going on the backside that deals with kind of more activists. So I want to have a conversation about activists and versus advocates, and what we appreciate, why we need them, why we don't want them. And this is a both sides issue, right? Every party has groups that are on the outer fringe, many issues. And this is not to say that we agree or disagree with those issues. But I just want to talk about what's going on right now, because don't you get the sense that there's a lot more of the fringe that is just angry, and it doesn't seem to matter who is in the way. They're so angry that nothing else matters. So I want to talk about that a little bit. Tony, I can see you deep in thought over there.
I'm deep in thought.
But just, you know, this is our conversation for this section. Talk about the kind of the extremes, or what's going on, good, bad, or otherwise.
Well, I mean, if we went back to the year, say, 1900, people who thought there should be a minimum wage or women's rights to vote or conservation in the environment, I'm sure they would have sounded really angry and really bitter. Unemployment insurance. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But now we look back and we say, those people were right. So I look at people today who might strike me as being overly angry, maybe bitter. And I always ask myself, well, what will this look like in 20, 30, 40, 50 years? And I personally don't like, for my own personal advocacy style, I don't like public display of bitterness and anger.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's a school of thought that says if you're not angry, you're not really paying attention. I think there's a role. I mean, can you give us a specific example, Chris, of what you have in mind by the, say, bitter, angry activist?
Well, I think the where I have an issue is where people are ultra passionate about one issue. And maybe that's just for a period of time, but nonetheless, they are uber, uber passionate about one issue and nothing else seems to matter. For instance, if they have, and again, you could pick both sides on this. It really isn't meant to be about one group or anything. It's just the concept of it. But you could have people that are, you know, theoretically, they are more people-based than corporate-based. They're more focused on injustice versus taxes, right?
Yeah.
And if they are just looking at one issue, whether, I don't care if it's LGBT, I don't care if it's the Middle East, if the only thing they see is the one issue at hand, and anyone who does not completely align themselves with making the change they want on that one issue, then they're throwing them under the bus. And by that, it's by, you know, verbally, video, taunting, whatever that may be. And I guess that's the part that I have a hard time with, because there's no one on the planet that is only affected by one issue.
Right.
Not me, not you, not on the red side, not on the blue side. We are all impacted by many, many things. So my challenge with the whole radical style mentality is, if you're going to pick a platform, it should be at least a platform
and not a stick,
as opposed to one issue. And then, you know, you do have to look at the big picture. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right, because if you are so focused on that one item, you can't see the impact that that one item might have on other areas.
Right.
You know, and I appreciate what Tony said about, you know, maybe back in the day when they were talking about, you know, women's rights and minimum wages and whatnot. But I would say also that I think there's a big difference between advocacy and activism.
Amen.
And I will go back to a few weeks back. My dad received a Lifetime Achievement Award for work with Judicare, which helps low-income people with legal support when they have something going on. Mm-hmm. So they advocate for those people who are struggling. A great event, a lot of good people there, but all strong advocates for what they did and understanding the impact they can have in the world, and the support they need to make that happen. Now, if that would have been done as an activist group screaming in your face and challenging you on your thought process, I don't think you'd have the same impact. So I get where from both sides of it, they think they're having a substantial impact, but sometimes the tactics used can be pretty abrasive. They can be demeaning. They can be violent at times. And they really don't always help the cause as much as the advocate who sticks to the cause and really with passion still speaks to it and starts to move people and pull them over to their side. I think sometimes the activist is just pushing people away, and all they get is the same, maybe for lack of better phrasing, radical people to come onto their side with them. And that's about it.
Yeah. I mean, and I appreciate the advocate versus activist conversation. And I do believe there is a place for both. I think that the activist's job is to get people's attention. The advocate's job is to continue almost like a slow cooker to keep the conversation going forward. Yep. And my challenge is, if you can shout or use a sign or something to get someone to realize there's an issue, that's great. But then civilized conversation takes place at a civilized volume, mm-hmm. right? In my opinion, shouting, screaming, you know, insults, that type of stuff, that's not how people listen. The louder someone speaks, the harder it is to pay attention, in my opinion.
No, I agree with both of you, but I also think that there are many people in our society who have discovered that when they attempt what we're calling civil dialogue and discussion, that the system of power is not responsive.
Yeah.
That Dean is on the DePere City Council. Mm-hmm. I've been on the Oshkosh Common Council. Chris, you're on the Appleton Common Council.
Right.
In all three of those communities, there are people who believe, and I'm not saying that they're right, but they believe that those bodies, those city councils, only really pay attention to powerful people. Now, you might say that's wrong. You can give 100 examples where the Appleton Council actually pays attention to the little people out there. But I know when I was on the council in Oshkosh, there were so many people that were convinced that you can't fight City Hall.
Yeah.
And so therefore you have to maybe raise your voice. And they believe the only thing that the city council responds to is public pressure.
Yeah.
And so they might raise their voice. Do I endorse that? Not necessarily, but I understand why it happens.
Right.
And I agree with you, Tony, a little bit. I think the difference, though, between the ones that raise their voice, the times that I've heard that you can't fight City Hall is when somebody's got a personal claim, they want the city to change something. But when we look at it for the benefit of the entire city of DePere, it might not fit in.
Yeah.
Right. So those are the ones I hear that from. So I get it. I mean, I've heard that too.
I saw something on Facebook the other day that said if you could, you know, make one thing in the world disappear, one trait disappear in the world, what would it be? And my answer was selfishness. Because in the end, if everyone looked outward as opposed to individual, and this is a general conversation, mm-hmm. you would remove a lot of the chaos in the world, because instead of looking at how my sidewalk, how my child,
correct.
How my family, how my career, my taxes, instead of looking at me as the world as an individual and how it impacts me, you'd be looking at it as how it impacts us and others. And I think that the entire world would be in a different situation if we could take that self out. It's impossible, though. We had about 30 seconds here. We are heading into our first break. Excited to be here with the fellas on a beautiful Thursday night. We are WGBW, WISS, Rational Revolution. I'm Chris Alfheim. Come on back on the net backside. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. Welcome back, everybody. We understand there was a little bit of a technical glitch for the first handful of minutes. Boy, did you miss a show. Woo! I mean, it was chaos.
It almost
in here.
Got violent.
I can't believe we survived that.
I can't even believe it. We are going to back up just a little bit and say hello to somebody, though. Go ahead.
All right. So I did promise my daughter, Kaylee, that I would give a shout out to her tonight. So she's home visiting. So she'll be here for a couple of days. She is a wonderful daughter and a great nurse down in
Milwaukee.
Oh, she's
a nurse.
Yes.
Great for her.
Absolutely.
And Kaylee, you're welcome. I kept your dad busy for a good hour. All right. So we came out of our first section. We were talking about, differences between advocacy and activism. Hopefully that's recorded so we can go back because it was a pretty good conversation. We are now going to change topics. Again, if you guys don't realize, again, I'm here with Dr. Tony Palmieri and Dean Rash. I don't tell them what we're going to talk about.
Correct.
This is meant to be conversation from different viewpoints. So we don't come in here with notes. We don't come in here with stats. We just come in here and trust each other to have a good conversation.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that y'all continue to do that. So we're going to move on to the topic of books.
Books.
A new bill was floated out there in Wisconsin about library books. Anybody pay attention to that?
So,
in Wisconsin, the Republicans have laid out a bill that says what they really want is any child 15 or under, any book or article that they check out of the library, school library, but really what they want is public in the long run, a list must be sent home. Now, there's a lot of issues with that. Does anyone else hear them, or is it just me? Tony, I'll let you go first.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a big brother to me, and I just think back to my own experience. I went to a Catholic school, and yet I felt I had some freedom to read without my, you know, my parents always looking over my shoulder. And I just have this concern that it's really the adults pushing this kind of legislation that are the ones that have the problem. And then they kind of project it onto the children.
Yeah.
Right? Like the children can't handle this. No, you can't handle it. And now you're projecting it onto your children.
Yeah.
So I don't know the details of this legislation, but from what the little bit that I have read about it, to me, it just does seem like kind of a big brother at work.
Yeah. Dino, to me, what coming out of Tony's conversation, it kind of sounds like more government, which is not normally, or at least traditionally, what the Republican side has wanted. In, for instance, deregulation. Right. The GOP forever has said less, less government, smaller government, less oversight, less regulation, less, except in a number of social style issues right now. So tell me your thoughts on this, Bill.
Well, again, like Tony, I don't know all the details of the bill, but I can say that as parents, and technically as government in this situation, we have the right to be able to understand and know what our kids are being taught for being allowed to read in school.
Good point. And you have that already. Legally in the state of Wisconsin, without this bill, legally in the state of Wisconsin, any parent can ask for that list.
Correct. But I think some people will take this and say they're book banning. The books are still available to read outside of that. They're just saying for certain age-appropriate situations, they shouldn't be provided at the schools. If you want to go out and buy those books on your own, feel free. They're available. Mm-hmm. But to offer things that might not be age appropriate for children, they're saying we need to maybe do a better job of what we make available at the schools. And I will say, even as a college professor, there is a book list that you give for a class. You can't allow the student to read anything else. Well, you could, but they're never going to pass your test. Right,
because they're reading the wrong information. I don't think those are the same issue. Yeah. I mean, let's pretend it's Kaylee, right? And Kaylee's not on the phone right here, but if she were a 17-year-old in high school right now, do you think that you would want her to have the freedom to explore and learn, and or would you only want her to read and learn about what you felt was right?
No. Now the question is very vague, and I get that. So I would be okay with her reading what she wants to learn, but if she was a second grader and being handed a book on that was not appropriate for the age, teaching, you know, sexual acts or something like that, which I don't know if there's a legit, you know, book that's out there, that I would have a problem with. If it was being supplied by the school and asked to read without some sort of parental oversight, I would have a concern with that. Now she's 17. You know, she's almost an 18-year-old, you know, legal adult. Read what you want to read. Explore, figure out what you want to learn and understand. But I think the question is why they're picking the age group they are is because we want to make sure that the items that are there for them to read, number one, shouldn't be assigned to the students. It should be something they can do.
And that's not the bill. The bill is not talking about who's assigning, you know, the grapes of wrath in school. That's not it. They're saying that we all did. Why? Because it was
required
reading. I can't imagine
As classic literature. Yeah.
So this bill to me is overreaching. And I think, again, it's a solution in search of a problem, which honestly, I used to hear that statement from my Republican friends all the time. And maybe it's true on both sides, but I don't get it. If we already have the ability, first, shouldn't there be a relationship in your household where, one, there's a little bit of trust that they can go and be who they want to be? Mm-hmm. And if you said, hey, what are you reading? There hopefully is not a gap in relationship where they say, never mind.
But I think I think that's the issue. Some of the parents do have those relationships and they're asking, what are you reading? And the students, their child is giving them the book and going, well, where did you get this from? So I think that's where the impetus for this bill probably came from in the first place.
And if anybody thinks that in our public schools, our shelves are riddled with crazy books, we know better than that. So now we're talking about all these books that are being banned. Have you looked at the lists? I mean, as a young girl, I read Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, mm-hmm. as well as every other 9 to 12-year-old girl that I knew. And we did do it kind of quietly away from our parents because we thought it was an advanced topic. Where else are you going to learn that you're not alone in this world? How do you learn that? Because you have to have the ability to utilize resources to say, I'm not alone. And I think we have to, at some point in time, have some faith in our libraries that they're not putting garbage on the shelves.
We've seen some of that happen, though, and I think that's where this is coming from.
But so what?
I would say this is more of an activist to maybe pull into an advocacy type of situation. This is the art of the deal, right? You've got to push the envelope to kind of get back to a middle ground in terms of what we really think is best for our schools and for our students.
Well, I think that would also be a challenge because I don't know that, you know, we're not all going to agree. We only got about 45 seconds, but we're not all going to agree on what should or should not be allowed to be read.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. So are we just going to just stop reading? Should we just not have any books anymore? And if that's the case, who cares? Because the internet lives.
Yeah.
And no one seems to know what their kids are doing on TikTok and Instagram. No one. There's a problem. I mean, we're going to come back to this conversation because I think it's a deep enough one. We are the Rational Revolutions. We don't have all the answers. We are having conversations and trying to listen to other people's points of view so that you can maybe share in that. Feel free to text us, Civic Media app, and here at the station. Come on back after the break. Chris Elfheim, Rational Revolution.
If you'd like to join the Rational Revolution and engage, download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. Choose your station, WGBW or WISS, and click on the text button in the lower right-hand corner. Looking at today's issues through a politically purple lens, this is the Rational Revolution. And once again, here's Chris Elfheim.
Welcome back, everybody. I just want to give a little shout out to Conrad on the board over there. Whoop, whoop. He's new. The poor guy's hanging in there. I just met him, 17 minutes ago, but he's doing a great job over there. So we're happy to have him. Hopefully we won't, drive him too crazy.
No, you guys are great.
Fresh out of UW-Milwaukee.
Yep.
Whoop! Good job. All right, so we left off at our last conversation kind of talking about this bill in Madison for libraries to now start managing who's taking out what books. I would kind of like to lean that conversation into book banning in general. We've not done this on this show, but this is a topic that's been floating around for a long time. We've all seen lists. School boards are dealing with this. Public libraries are dealing with this. Let's just talk about the fact that books are being banned and some of the books that they're banning and how we feel about that. Tony, let's have you start.
Oh, well, I mean, I think it's atrocious. I mean, I think the best recent example is, I think it was the Menominee Falls School District in Wisconsin, where the school board decided to ban, I believe, over 30 books from the school library, including The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood.
Right.
And Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut Jr., I believe. Absolutely classic literature that, I mean, I think everyone should read The Handmaid's Tale, right? I read Slaughterhouse-Five in Catholic high school.
Yeah.
So I just think that there's overreach. And once again, as I said earlier, I think this has less to do with protecting children and has more to do with the agenda of the activist book banners that want to see their own view of the world prevail in the school system and in other areas. And I think it needs to be resisted. I mean, I hate to use the phrase anti-American, but I do think that censorship, given our First Amendment, censorship is one of the most anti-American things we can have.
Yeah. Dean?
Well, I was just sitting back and pondering.
Mm-hmm. Pontificating?
Pontificating. You know, it's tough because I think book banning is probably not the right phrasing for it. Because I'm not for book banning.
You can't
either,
argue about the name. Argue about the issue.
I can argue about the name.
No.
You just called on me.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. So you're okay with it? Just call it something nicer.
Well, sure. But I don't think we're banning books like we're taking them out of society in general. I think they're just removing. Now, the two that you gave as an example, Tony, I never read them. Couldn't give you a comment on what's in them. But I don't see those as books of issue as far as I know of what they're about. But I will say from a book banning standpoint, they're asking for certain ones to be removed from the school library. We're not as a society burning them and banning them for the country. But we do that all the time anyway, because librarians have to pick what's appropriate for the school. Somebody is already going through a list of books and saying, this one can be here, this one can't. So the ones that can't, we call those, are those banned books then? But I would also say, really quickly, because I know Chris wants to speak, I would also say that I think the ones that I hear about anywhere are the ones with explicit sexual commentary in them that are being placed into younger students than letting a 17-year-old read a book of their choice. So I think there's a difference there. And those are the ones that I'm thinking of in terms of what comes out of the library, not like the two that Tony had mentioned for a high school.
Why would we ban The Color Purple?
I don't know.
Someone give me a good reason.
Well, I didn't read it, but I've seen the movie.
Right. Why would we ban The Hate U Give? Anybody read that one?
No.
I have not. I've read The Color Purple, but not the Hate. Is it called Hate?
The Hate U Give.
I have not read that one.
It is amazing. And the reason that I say that is I read it, and it was eye-opening to me because it put me inside of someone else's journey.
Mm.
It made me, for however many pages, feel what it felt like to be someone of a minority with a generational problem. I did not have the empathy until I read The Hate U Give, until I read James Baldwin.
Oh, yeah.
James Baldwin is amazing. And I think that the opportunity that books give us is to realize that the world is bigger than us.
That part I agree with.
So if we pick and choose what stories we think are appropriate to tell, because they may not show things in the most positive light, that's not right. Because it gives people the sense of if no one ever is exposed to an alternative reality, then they think what they see and how they live is the only way. That's not real. I saw an image the other night on, I don't know if it's Facebook or whatever, but it showed the flattened out map of the world. You know how they smear out the globe? And they circled the Middle East in red. They highlighted it. And there was a comment. The comment was basically that the entire Bible was written within that geographic area. That geographic area. And we all know and many appreciate what's in the Bible. And yet the rest of the world is still there, and it was never even thought of, mentioned, or in any way. Now, that has nothing to do with knocking on the story. What I'm saying is that if you never leave the county that you live in, do you really have any idea what the country is?
No.
No. So if you don't physically have the ability as a 15-year-old, as a 16-year-old, as a 17-year-old, and I'm not going to argue about a 7-year-old because that's not who the problem is with. But in reality, if you do not have the opportunity to travel through literature to learn and absorb what the rest of the world actually might look like, are you giving them an opportunity to truly find success?
No. And it does seem, though, Chris, though, that the bulk of the censorship attempts are aimed at books that have LGBTQ themes or race themes. I mean, I think alternative history themes. Yeah, I mean, a great example is the 1619 Project.
Yes.
Nicole Hannah Jones, a series of essays that has been
fantastic
and censored in many parts of the country.
Unbelievable.
Very, very sadly.
Yep.
And it's simply an alternative view of American history.
The thing is, it's alternative to us. It's not alternative to them. And that's my point. You know, I think we are so afraid of what we do not understand. And I think that's what I try on this show to create the empathy, because what we think is usually based on how we've been raised, in the demographic we've been raised, in the geographic area we've been raised. And it isn't, we don't always have it right, right?
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, I was raised by great parents. They're wonderful people. There's not a negative, there's not a racist bone in their bodies. But we lived in a small town. We lived in a small town. We didn't go to Chicago. We weren't exposed. We didn't have a lot of diversity at all where I lived. And I didn't read much on it either. It took me until I was in my late 40s before I actually started digging in. And I, as a person, have changed because I have empathy for people that don't look and live the same way that I do. Why would we not want that?
See, and I think I have the blessing of having grown up in a mixed race family with Native Americans, Black, gay, lesbian. We were all just family.
Sure.
And so I grew up in that kind of an environment. And so I did see the world differently based on that. And a lot of our history and a lot of the things that I appreciate about having that blend of culture is it was the stories that were told by the older relatives. And we had some great storytellers. Some of it was real. Some of it was meant for effect. But in addition to that, I've had the chance to travel the world as well. And to be into countries and places that were very different than anything that we do. I've had the opportunity to visit close to 30 countries in my life. And to be able to experience that firsthand and to be able to see those things gives me a perspective, I think, a fortunate perspective for myself to see what it's like to be different.
I think that, again...
I didn't get that from books. I just got that from...
Well, I've met your dad, and he's fabulous.
Yeah, and he's Native.
He is.
Proud Mohican Indian.
There you go. But I think that, you know, even when we talk about the LGBT, there are a lot of people, and it is their right to have whatever beliefs that they choose. However, it is reality that anyone is going to be interacting with someone of the LGBT situation. And I think that as soon as you see a family that someone, whether it be a friend of a relative, whether it be a relative, as soon as one person of the LGBT community is in a family, that entire family becomes more aware because they now are seeing an LGBT person as just the person that they've always known. They're kind, they're giving, they're quality members of society. Mm-hmm. So then the danger is it just that one? Or are we going to realize that all people are out there? There are people of different color. There are people of different creeds, different religion. The whole Merry Christmas thing is starting to get me. I'm a Christmas person, right? But I don't understand why it's so hard for us to realize that we aren't the only religion. And if we just have, because we're polite people, to say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. I've never had anybody snap at me because I said Merry Christmas. But I could have made them feel even better by tagging on and Happy Holidays. We are not the only religion. We're not. And it isn't a matter of wanting to be anything else. I'm happy where I'm at. No one's trying to convert me. I'm just trying to be kind. Why is it an assault on people when we, you know, and we all see this, it continues to go on. Just say Merry Christmas. Why can't we say Merry Christmas? It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of trying to be more welcoming because we realize the world is bigger than our own tradition. Is that so bad? Is it just me? Feel free to text in, by the way, if you have an opinion on this.
No, it's not just you, Chris. I promise it's not just you.
I mean, I get that it's different. And again, my thoughts and my opinions have changed over the years, but it's because I've realized that the world is bigger than I am. And I'm willing to be part of that bigger world, not be mad that people aren't doing it exactly as I've always had it my entire life. Yeah. Is that so? Again, take out selfishness out of the world and what changes? So much. Because selfishness, in my opinion, is what leads us to be, these are my beliefs and you're not going to think anything else. These are my beliefs and my children are going to believe exactly what I think. This is what I know, therefore this is what you know. That is selfish. Right?
Yeah. Go ahead, Dean.
I'll let you go ahead, Tony.
Okay. No, I mean, I always find it interesting that on cable news, they'll spend a lot of time on Merry Christmas versus Happy Holidays. But, you know, for people who take Christmas seriously, I think they should be more upset at how it's become like this hyper commercial extravaganza. Like, what does that have to do with the actual Christmas holiday? Right. And I don't see a lot of anger at that, right? How Christmas gets exploited by commercial interests. But if someone says Happy Holiday, right, that's supposed to be what we're upset about. I just think our priorities are kind of out of whack.
People get so mad. How did that hurt you? How does it hurt?
It doesn't, but I think that, you know, just to kind of counter Tony's comment a little bit, if somebody says Happy Holidays to me, doesn't matter.
Right.
I say Merry Christmas because that's who I am. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to be forced to say something different.
Nobody's forcing anybody.
Right, exactly.
There are businesses that do that.
But you know why?
Because they're trying to be more inclusive.
And why is that bad?
But I will also say that at least from our side, from our family, the exploitation of Christmas, the commercialization, mm-hmm. we're not a big fan of it. You know,
I get all that.
But that's all of our stuff. But I think that we should be able to say what we want. If somebody says Happy Holidays to me, I could care less.
But you're wishing it to someone else.
Right. I'm saying Merry Christmas, and they're saying Happy Holidays.
So I didn't tell you, but I'm Jewish. I have been since I've known you.
No problem with
I'm
me.
Not, but you see my point?
I don't have an issue with that.
I could
tell the first time I met you. I'm just waiting for you to admit it.
All right. We are heading to a break again. This is a Rational Revolution. I'm not sure how rational we are tonight, but we're trying. Come on back on the back side of the break. Thanks. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution with my friend.
That was too short.
Dean Rash and Dr. Tony Palmieri. We are talking all things. We talked a little bit about advocacy versus advocates. We talk about books. We talked about libraries. And we just got done talking about Christmas versus Happy Holidays. And it didn't really end, I got to tell you. It went rolling right through the break. And then we complained the break wasn't long enough because we still couldn't finish. My point on all of this is, again, and you can go all the way back to the initial conversation where my issue is about single-mindedness, right? We want what we want. We are passionate about what we're passionate at, and everything else be damned. And whether you think that or not, if our actions never change when we add in new information, and we become aware of bigger circumstances than we knew in the past, aren't we guilty of that?
I wasn't paying attention to the question.
Yeah. What is the question in there?
I would challenge all of us, at least have been, if not, are still guilty of seeing the world through only our own glasses.
Oh, of course.
That's it.
Are.
And you have Native American blood. We could have the Thanksgiving conversation. We could have that conversation.
Why? Thanksgiving conversations. We can't believe you guys stayed here.
Yeah.
We thought you were leaving after dinner.
No, I look at it as, I don't think anybody should stop celebrating Thanksgiving, because what it truly is today, we talked about our traditions when we started out, mm-hmm. it's the gathering of family and friends, being thankful for what we've been given and what we have, right? There are no pilgrims, there are no feathers anywhere in our Thanksgiving celebrations. I'll bet you there aren't in yours either. So are we, that's different. But my point is, there are people that are so mad that Thanksgiving is celebrated at all, and there are those that are mad that anybody might say something against the holiday of Thanksgiving because it is then downplaying the actual history. Where is the medium? Where is the medium that says, I respect, I understand there were abuses in our colonialism mentality mm-hmm. that we just bulldozed over, and the entire world worked that way. Whoever had the strongest and the most did. Mm-hmm. And people were taken advantage of. all of this is related. Everything we're talking about today is related. And again, it is empathy. It's about how do we learn and then learn respect for what's going on.
So quick question. Do we think that sometimes the activists that are there are really just trying to pick apart something because they don't like it? And so their goal is not to change something that's got a positive to it, like Thanksgiving, coming together, sharing, being thankful for things, whether we go back to Native stuff and colonial stuff, whatever it might be. But is it just these people who are bitter about the world that just want to disrupt it and make everybody else bitter?
I think there's always going to be a couple of those. But I think by and large, the activist, again, is trying to get our attention. I mean, The Hate U Give is a great example. And I would challenge anyone who's not read that book, please go read it. And it may be difficult for you to read, but read it because it opens your eyes. You know, I have many, many times, and again, we've all had thoughts of why are we worried about this? Mm-hmm. the civil rights movement was so long ago. You have just as much as opportunity as I do. Pull yourself by the bootstraps, right? We have this. Mm-hmm. 600 years of slavery went on in this country. 600. We have the civil rights since when?
64.
Right? Early 60s.
So what else happened in 1964?
Were you born?
No. A few years later. 1964 was the first year that Native Americans had the full right to vote in federal elections in this country because one state had held out for a long time.
There
Up
you go.
Until that point, Native Americans did not have the right to vote in federal elections across the country.
We're young people, and our perception of reality is what we have lived. So therefore, we think, I'm 52 years old, civil rights happened before I was born. Therefore, there's no problem. We got past that. No, because there are generational consequences that have come from that. Now, I'm not here to say how we fix it, right? What I'm saying is that there's a reason there are still activists, there are reasons there are still there are still advocates, and the rest of us that aren't necessarily either one at least have to be willing to learn and listen. We have to be able to learn and listen to create the empathy, and we have to be able to do that in order to do it. I don't think we should wait until we're 19 years old and out of high school to be able to start learning about something that maybe we didn't learn from our parents or in our community. I don't think that should be the case. Shouldn't we become expanding who we are as society when we know that we are lacking? It takes want to broaden our own horizons and be able to acknowledge, I get it. We talk about when Libby was on, we talked about, privilege. And I think she did a great job of trying to help us understand. When you only think about I don't necessarily like the term white privilege, but we think about it in terms of the age that we are. And therefore, it's kind of thrown away by most of us in this part of the world. But the reality is there's so much more to it. It's what was not given. What was not given the opportunity to be gained, all of those things for hundreds of years. And we just think everything is okay now, right? So we don't have, our job on this show is not to have the answers. Our job is to say, share some ideas and see what's out there and see if we can become a better human population by being a little bit less selfish and a little bit more open to learning. We can always read a book and say, I disagree. We can always read a book and say, holy cow, I learned something new. But if we don't have the opportunity to read the book to get something different, then we are guilty of staying in a hole and then propagating only the knowledge that we have, society-wise, geography-wise, everything. And I think that's wrong, and we have to do better.
Well, and we have to support teachers, I think, that challenge kids to empathize, as you say. And I think too often today, teachers like that are under threat.
Yeah,
I think there's an attempt to get them to teach an officially approved view of reality. I think that's scary.
We got 1 minute. And the last thing I'm going to say on this, we talk about, and to Dean's point, age-appropriate material. Mm-hmm. How many people have been playing the video games, the cars, the shooting cars? There's actually strippers, drugs, beating people, machine guns. There's video games all over the place that have material that none of us, I think, would approve to hand out in a library.
And same thing.
And yet it goes on in every household. Yeah. So if you're going to try and regulate thought, you got way too much to try and regulate. You can't do it. We've got to start opening up our eyes. Listen, guys, I enjoy having a conversation with you every time. I appreciate both of you. We'll do it again soon. Next week, we've got my friend, the original co-host, Emily Sheffos, is coming back with us. Again, be rational. Be empathetic. Go read a book, for crying out loud. Maybe one that you wouldn't have thought of before. We love you here. Come on back next week.